Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. Today we want to talk about the NHS. Now, there's a lot of confusion about what the Tories' real intentions are for the NHS. They swear that they will not privatise the NHS and pledge more money for hospitals, doctors, nurses, and that they say that they do care about preserving the NHS. But how do their words match up to their actions? So let's look at what happened last time the Conservatives had a chance to vote for protecting the NHS.
The last time they had a chance to have a vote in the House of Commons and express how they really felt about the NHS was on Wednesday the 23rd of October. There was an amendment tabled to the Queen's speech. It was actually called a motion of regret. And I'll read it just because it's very, very plain. The House respectfully regrets that the gracious speech does not repeal the Health and Social Care Act of 2012 to restore a publicly provided and administered National Health Service and protect it from future trade agreements that would allow private companies competing for services who put profit before public health, and that could restrict policy decisions taken in the public interest. So in other words, the Labour put this forward, Jeremy Corbyn put this forward basically. There was a motion to take the NHS off the table in any trade deals, because by this time, Trump had already said that infamous thing, you know, everything's on the table, NHS, whatever. He'd already said that. Anyway, this is the way the vote went, and I looked this up because I was very interested how Boris Johnson voted, or whether in fact he was present, and he did vote against. This is how it went. The motion was defeated by a margin of 28. 281 Tory MPs, 19 independent MPs, which included 18 former Tory MPs and former Labour MP John Woodcock. All 10 DUP MPs all voted against. The Lib Dems abstained. So basically, if they'd have voted with Labour, it might not have got through. But I'm not sure how that would work. But anyway, the people who voted for it was the 233 Labour, 35 SNP, 4 Plaid Cymru, 6 Independents, 1 Green and 3 Tige, you know, the Tinge Party, I call them, those kind of renegade, muddled centrists. So as you can see, and when I looked at the record, I know for a fact Boris Johnson voted against it, and I don't think any Tories voted for it. Now, they're now swearing blind that they're not going to privatise the NHS. Dominic Raab was on the radio this morning at 7:10 on the Radio 4 Today propaganda programme. He said this: no privatisation of NHS on our watch. So what, if that's the case, if this is the thinking, why didn't they vote so once and for all, take it out of the trade deals that they want with the US?
I think the reason for that is because they're lying.
Well, they don't have a good record on telling the truth, do they?
No.
They don't have a good record on telling the truth. As far as I can see, they've been systematically compromising the NHS for at least the last 10 years. But ideologically, it goes right the way back to Thatcher's victory in 1979. And remember that the central dogma of Toryism post-Thatcher is that the market does everything better, which is why they privatised everything that had previously been held in collective ownership. British Telecom, all the gas, electricity, telecoms, water, you know, just sold off to the private sector. And recently, in the last few years, the post office, you know, the Royal Mail, sold off at a knockdown price to their mates.
So to add more to the argument that they really are not intending to protect the NHS is the fact that they have already privatised much of the NHS, yeah, and are still doing it. So they are claiming, yeah, they are not doing something that they are actually already doing.
Yeah. The NHS has always had a private component right from its inception in 1948, and all the politics was going on for some years, even before the end of the war, towards instituting a welfare state, including free health care at the point of delivery. And it came about in 1948. I think it was August or something, was it? Yeah, 1948, 71 years ago. And the doctors opposed it, basically. They wanted to carry on making money, charging for the services and making money. And the Tories opposed it. They voted against it 21 times in Commons.
So they've always been against the NHS.
Yeah, they claimed that they were for it originally, because they did sort of put forward some discussion papers or something like that. But when it come to shove, they voted against it.
22 times.
21 times, I think it was.
That's quite a lot of times.
And Noel Bevan, who was the Labour guy who really was the brains behind it and who managed to push it through, because Labour won the election in 1945 after the war. Everybody thought Churchill was going to get in, the great hero, and surprise, surprise, Labour got in. Fantastic. But troops were radicalised by the war, as it happened. But anyway, the doctors opposed it. And I think basically what happened, they did a deal with them. They said, well, OK, you can keep some private practice. And in fact, the GPs, the general practitioners, remained private, and they still to this day. Your GP is either a lone trader or a small private company with a partners. You know, when you get three or four doctors in a surgery, they are actually private businesses, and they contract to the NHS. They have a contract with the NHS as private business. So it's always been private to some extent. But since Thatcher, they have this idea the market does everything best. It's a dogma. Mrs. Thatcher was a great disciple of Friedrich Hayek, and he did a great job on changing the culture, the economic dogmas, and the common sense of an era. You know, and he was working on this from the 30s. But when Thatcher got in 1979, it just then slowly became the accepted way things work, to the extent that New Labour remained within that paradigm. They didn't change the economic paradigm, or they were now liberals. A slightly more human face, slightly, I say, and that was about it. But Mrs. Thatcher wanted to introduce internal markets, and you can see Jeremy Corbyn speaking against it in Parliament. In 1990, when he was only been in Parliament a short time, standing up, you can get it on YouTube.
Himself unpopular right from the start.
Well, you know, being on the right side of history, I would say. And he said you cannot reduce this to markets. And I think he's right.
Yeah.
You know, by and large, he's right. Okay, there might be a case for letting a small workers' co-op in a town do all the laundry for the hospitals in the town. Why not? You know, but when it comes to, like, the clinical stuff, the idea that private is better is, I think, empirically wrong. We know it doesn't. It's not working.
No.
And this 2012 Act, which is mentioned in the vote, is pretty unpopular. But what it says is, it says that everything's up for tender. It has to be up for what's the word they use? It's like a tendering system. You have to have competition on any provision. So it's procurement procedures is what it's called, this. So any procurement that a care commissioning body wants to make has to go out to tender. So you put it out and four or five companies say, we'll do it for X number of money and we'll do it like this and da-da-da. And it applies to anything costing over £615,278. Which is not really a lot of money, so it's a bit over £500,000. So there's an awful lot of tendering going on, and private companies being involved. And to some extent, as we know, in certain parts of mental health, to the extent that all the nurses the mental health nurses transferred over to private companies in some aspects, like drug and alcohol in some.
And as we know, that has been quite a disaster, hasn't it?
It hasn't really worked, no. Anyway, there's a lot of criticism of the 2012 Act, including from the Commerce Select Committee on, I think it might even be public finances or... Anyway, certainly House of Commons Select Committee has said, well, there's problems with it. I mean, one of the problems with it is that the rules are too tight, is what they're saying, for procurement. I should mention these only apply in England. In Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, they've managed to circumvent it. There is, incidentally, EU law on that as well, which is basically the same thing. But again, you can sidestep it, as have done the devolved governments of Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland. But in England, it goes through this thing. And the select committee says that the rules are too tight. And you can get costly legal challenges, as we saw with Virgin challenged. That they put in to supply, I don't know what it was. Because every trust, every NHS trust has its own care commissioning body. So Virgin put in for one of these, and I don't know what it was, but they lost it. And then they Sarah Grapes, they said they're going to sue the government, or the trust, basically the government indirectly, but they're going to sue the trust for not administering the procurement procedure and the tendering procedure and the competition rules properly. And I think there was an out-of-court settlement of quite a lot of money. Well, this is taxpayers' money going to Richard Branson's gang. You know, you get a lot of this. You get these you get these legal challenges, which of course they take up money, they take up time. The healthcare trust have got to employ lawyers, and the whole kind of thing. Yeah, and the idea is that you privatise because it's more efficient. But of course, it introduces all these other inefficiencies, and that the procurement procedure actually is administratively expensive. This is what the select committee said. The BMA is also not really too enamoured of the 2012 Act that was mentioned in the vote in the Commons. And they say about it that their basic problem with competition in the health service is this. They say competition within the health systems leads to fragmentation and undermines the NHS's own founding principle of publicly funded healthcare. This is the BMA in 2017 when they produced a briefing on competition and procurement in the healthcare system. They also campaigned quite hard, and I think maybe in some indirect way they're behind the wording of this amendment that was proposed to the Queen's speech. And they said they say this in the briefing I just cited, that they want to exempt the NHS from future international trade agreements, because they can see the danger. I mean, this BMA briefing is one of the most transparent things I've read in researching the NHS, and they would know, wouldn't they? It's funny, though, the doctors are now in love with the NHS, whereas they opposed it pretty well, as the majority of the profession opposed it in 1948. In fact, the propaganda that went out against the establishment of the NHS is really interesting. It's just worth looking into, just to see how propaganda works, to see that the same shit was happening then in 1945 to 48 that was happening now. And they said that they said it was like a move towards Nazism, and that health service would be like the Gestapo, you know, the gutter press doing their thing, you know. And honest to God, you couldn't make it up, and you still can't make it up, can you? So that's the sort of background to that, really.
I mean, another thing that's directly contradicts the Conservatives' claims that they care about the NHS is how short they are on doctors and nurses, and the fact that even though on paper they look like they are giving them the money they need, in actual fact it is not keeping up with demand at all, And there's people are suffering greatly, including the doctors and nurses themselves, because they are massively overworked.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. I've got here nurse vacancies as of about now. 43,000 vacancies and 10,000 doctors' vacancies. And in fact, and in the health service, a total of 100,000 vacancies. Bear in mind, the NHS employs, I think it's 1.7 million people. It's certainly well over a million people. Well over. I think it's like the seventh biggest employer in the world. The biggest one is something like, I think it's like the Department of Defence in the US. Yeah. You know, all the military shit in America is like number one.
I wonder which way they'll be voting.
You know, but it's a huge employer. It's an absolutely huge employer. But 43,000 nurse vacancies. Now, what did the Tories do? Is they in austerity? They've done a lot of things in the name of austerity. Now, they haven't actually exactly cut the NHS, but they've cut the increase in the spending to a very, very minimal level that's below what is needed to keep pace with inflation and increased demand. And it is a bit of a bottomless pit. You have to be truthful about that, because we've got an ageing population and we've got new medical technologies being discovered every minute. But they're not necessarily cheap. Some of these modern wonder drugs cost thousands and thousands and thousands, you know. Okay, that's partly big pharma making huge profits out of its patented drugs, but it's also that they are actually very sophisticated technical artifacts, you know, especially when you get into genomics and all this kind of stuff. And so there is that to be accounted for, but I think that's a technical problem. The idea that the market does everything best isn't going to address. And if you think about it, I mean, basically the idea is everything has to be able to make a profit. So if I've got to add somewhere between 2% and 10% to everything that I do to appease the shareholders, make sure they get the dividends, that is an added cost on anything that happens. But of course, the argument of the free market is that they do it more efficiently than the centralised planning. They do it more efficiently, and the savings on the efficiency is enough to pay the shareholders their profit for investing their money in the private health company. And there's a bit more to reduce the cost to the consumer. That's the theory. The practice is they are actually profiting from people's ill health. You know, to my mind, it's seedy as fuck. Anyway, yeah, 43,000 nurses, but what they do as a part of austerity is cut the nurses' bursary. The nurses take a student loan now, or some equivalent to that. So in order to train, they end up with quite a big lump of debt. Now, they do actually a lot of work on the wards, student nurses. I think they're skivvy for a bit, just to sort of break them in, you know. So they're actually paying for the privilege of doing some really quite difficult work. You know, it's emotionally difficult work. I've been in care work. It's emotionally difficult. If you're not up to it, it breaks you. I've seen people, seen it break people loads of times. Being around it's human suffering all day, every day. You're either made of some very, very tough metal or it fucks you up. And they are, they're very tough people. But the idea that they pay for the privilege of doing that kind of work.
And then they've got all that debt to work
with. And then have debt, you know. I mean, basically what the Tories have given us, and New Labour are count as Tories, to be honest with you, is to get the basic wherewithal of life, which is an education and somewhere to live, that you end up with 25 years debt or a lifetime of debt. And that is a form of slavery. It's called debt peonage. You actually, that locks you into the system. And all this is done in the name of freedom. Remember that Hayek and all these people are people that say the most important value is freedom, by which they mean, you know, freedom to exploit, free market, freedom to shift capital around the planet, come whatever the effect on populations. That's what they mean by freedom. But being in debt peonage is not really freedom. Being locked into the system is not really freedom. But I think they're saying now, because because we've got an election, they're backpedalling like mad, aren't they? They're going to deliver 50,000 nurses, however they work this out, of which 19,000 are already working there, but they're going to dissuade them from leaving the profession. So they count, you know. This is the kind of shit that they come out with all the time. They say they're backpedalling.
It's like a new lie every day, isn't it?
I'm not sure of this, but I think I heard Boris Johnson say, oh, he's going to bring back the nurses' bursary. But of course, he says a lot of stuff. Most of what he said in the last 100 days of being Prime Minister has not transpired. He should be dead in a ditch if it was going to transpire.
Yes, he should.
You know, they're economical with the truth. The whole of that inner circle of Tories.
Yeah, and also, what they promised with the last election, very little of that ever saw the light of day.
No.
Well,
they just got bogged down in Brexit.
The new
anyway.
Homes that they were. The new homes that they promised, for instance, never got built. They made so many promises, just like they're doing now, and then nothing came of them. In fact, money was earmarked for certain projects that mysteriously seemed to disappear into thin air. Wonder where that went.
Now, privatisation, as we said, it's already been privatised to some extent. I heard on the TV debate, somebody said, oh, it was 7%. But actually, it's more than that. It's 7% on the medical procedures it's privatised. But facilities, there's 4.7 billion. There's 10 billion going into private facilities. 4.7 billion, this is per year, I think. Into capital. That means, you know, MRI scanners, buildings and so forth. 4.7 billion into that. And 17.4 billion into drugs going to private companies. 9.2 billion to private providers in a year. It's a huge budget, but there it is. That is quite a sizable sum of money that's going into shareholders' pockets.
So further information that we have that contradicts what the Conservatives say about how they want to preserve the NHS is, of course, the famous unredacted documents that Jeremy Corbyn dropped as a rather magnificent bombshell about a week ago.
Yeah, that was interesting. Now, we did know by this time that there had been some trade negotiations. Because Channel 4 did an expose of secret negotiations about the price of drugs. Now, the Labour Party put in a freedom of information request to the government to get get the minutes of these meetings, and there were six meetings. The government did provide the documents, but they were almost totally redacted, just black. You can see them just blacked out. Anyway.
Which is quite suspicious.
Labour got hold of some leaked ones. There has been some question, are these hoax documents? Well, nobody's denied that they're real documents, and it's now a good, I don't know how long it's been out, it's been over a week, hasn't it? So that kind of implies that they are probably the real thing, and it looks as though, I think there has even been an admission that these talks took place. Of course, Matt Hancock was saying on the 30th of No, the 30th of October on Radio 4 that there have been no formal meetings. They look pretty formal to me. If these are real documents, which I've taken a look at.
Because they happened over a few years, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, it goes right the way back up until the present time, from 2017 up until now.
Yeah.
The documents are 451 pages long. I have to admit, I haven't read them all, and I'm not going to. It's two. But I have looked.
It's one hell of a read.
It is one hell of a read. Andrew Neil took Barry Gardiner to task over this and kept hectoring him to say, well, is there any explicit admission that the NHS is for sale in the document? And Barry Gardiner says no. And so that was then the excuse for Neil to say, oh, well, it's Labour scaremongering. So there's this huge argument, Labour swearing blind that the Tories will give the NHS to American health companies and big pharma under Trump, as they fall into the arms of Trump. when the covertly planned no-deal Brexit occurs. So the Labour parties are asserting that on the basis of this document, and then on the other side, the Tories claiming it's safe on our watch, under no circumstances will we privatise it. What did Johnson say? He said something like, he gives a cast iron guarantee that the NHS will not be privatised. Bearing in mind that they've already been privatising it for absolutely ages and have refused to revoke the most damaging act, the 2012 Act, which is well on the way to giving it away. On top of that, we have to add their ideological commitments to neoliberal free market and the notion market does everything best. Central planning is not too reliable, etc. Now, the redacted document, again, does actually supply quite a bit of information, but it's mostly the bits that I can find that are about drugs prices. And it will be that the drugs bill goes up. And either the NHS has to get more money from somewhere.
Drugs become more scarce.
Or drugs become more scarce and treatments have to be rationed. I mean, there's going to be a measurement of triage and rationing in healthcare worldwide, regardless, as the technology gets better and as we have an ageing population. But it will exacerbate that side of things. And there's no doubt about it. And there's no doubt about these documents that it is about fire sailing the economy to the American.
Yeah, it doesn't just stop at the NHS. Documents are quite damning for a lot of things.
No, it's everything. People think it's just about that. It's not. It's about everything. And you can see the Americans have got the whip hand because their economy is so much more powerful, so much bigger. They've got the whip hand. And what did Richard Bergen say to Nigel Farage? You know, you're going on about independence, and that's your great kind of fetish, independence. But where's your independence when you give the economy away to Trump? You know, you're Trump's bitch. You know, he didn't say that, but that's what he implied. You know?
Yeah.
And it's true. If you read this document, and this is the tone of it, and actually the wording of it, it's America knows it has the whip hand, and they will drive very, very hard bargain. I should mention that there are clauses in there saying that no way can any kind of trade agreements be tied into standards of relating to CO2 emissions or global warming or any of that environmental stuff. The Americans say you can't bring that to the table. You can't, for instance, say we're not going to buy a product that's got this huge carbon footprint. We want you to. We'll only buy a product with smaller carbon footprint. Yeah. You can't say that. They absolutely rule that out. But you do need to realise that these documents are all predicated on there being a no-deal Brexit.
Yeah.
Now, why have they had six meetings, produced minutes, 451 pages of minutes, if no deal isn't a very serious expectation? Yeah. And the idea.
See, the Conservatives know how to wind, if they get elected in, they know how to kind of wind it out over the year, mess about, make sure it doesn't get through, and then, and we crash out with no deal because we run out of time.
And then the economy starts going to shit, and the Americans should throw you a life belt. And all
or
this
pretend to.
Yeah, and all the, and it'll be the only option is to fall into the arms of the American corporation.
Yeah.
And then all this groundwork has already been done.
Yeah.
So, now I did see a quote from the document, which I haven't been able to find. It may or may not be in there. You have to be fairly sceptical. Even when the figures and the quotes fit your narrative, still be sceptical, I would say. And I want to say to anybody listening to this, I am very, very, very sceptical of everything I hear about this, and I'm coming down to tell you that the Tories will screw the NHS. They will dismantle it. Over time, it's been dying a death of a thousand cuts for ages, and any professional, especially in the hospital sector, will tell you this. Nurses, doctors, surgeons, radiographers, they'll tell you this. They're not exactly unanimous, because there's always going to be Tories somewhere, but for the most part, because they see it at first at close quarters. Now, I've seen it at close quarters because my mother got sort of you know, she developed Alzheimer's and then lived another, having had a diagnosis, lived another 10 years, slowly going down. So she was in the system, and I had to be responsible for her and do what I could to make sure that she didn't suffer any more than necessary, you know, to minimise the suffering of a situation like that. And so I did sort of get some fairly close look at it. And I mean, what I would say, there was tremendous expertise, you know, and where they'd got, like, where the NHS had got something that could be organised, they were very, very organised. Like, you know, I used to take my mum to a clinic for what's called Lucentis injection, which, because she was losing the sight in one of her eyes through macular degeneration, but there's an injection that you probably need to have every few months, or every couple of months, something, which stops it or slows it down significantly. But it would entail going to the hospital once every month or once every 6 weeks for an examination. More, you know, and they've got a really, really good system, and we never waited very long. And she went through the various procedures, the various tests, and then they'd say you need.
This was about 3 years ago, wasn't it?
Oh, when no, it's more. It's more than that. You know, I'm trying to think how long it's been.
It was probably about 4 years ago.
What I'm trying to say about this is that it was good because it was hyper organised. It really was. It was done like military. Now, the one time there was some staff off sick, we waited all day to get a procedure done, you know, and it was horrible. But casualty, my mum would fall over, and several times I took her to casualty. She fell down the stairs and this, that, and the other. And that was an absolute nightmare, I have to say. It was a nightmare. So imagine waiting pretty well all night to see a triage nurse who decides whether you go to the doctor or not, you know. And then being told there's another 3 hours to wait before you can see the doctor. You know, with an old lady in her 90s, in pain because she's got a bump on the back of her head the size of a tennis ball.
And frightened because she doesn't really know where she is.
With dementia, I mean, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. And they were trying their best. Everybody was trying their best. I'm going to knock the staff. They were trying their best, but the place was chocker with people, and like, obviously understaffed, underfunded. They'd had a new unit built and all this kind of stuff, no doubt under some kind of private finance initiative or something. But it was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. And it's like, when they were organised and they got the people, they could do it. It's not like they can't do it. You know, the quality of the people, the expertise is from what I've seen, pretty bang on. But there were bits of it that were nightmarish, you know.
Well, as I said, this experience you had was a fair few years ago now, and I think that things will not be as good.
Well, we know objectively that the 4 hour wait, which is still, you wait 4 hours in the casualty for anything, but there was a commitment to get the waiting down to four hours, which they did under the new Labour, got it down to that. And when the Tories got it, and when austerity hit, it started creeping up again. And they don't meet that target now. I don't know what it is. It's like 70% or something as a pattern. I don't know what the figures are, but it's deteriorated greatly. Waiting lists have deteriorated greatly. How long do you have to wait for a life-saving operation? Don't try and get any kind of mental health service. you can kind of wait forever. And a lot of the objective figures have shown a marked deterioration. Now, you can either believe that they're winding it down so that more and more people with the cash will go buy private health insurance, or whether it's just mismanagement on the part of the government, or whether it is cuts. Bear in mind their austerity, and which they cut everything, either cut everything or reduce the rate at which the spending is increased. It was completely economically unnecessary, It wasn't necessary.
Yeah, that's the thing that a lot of people still don't realise is that these absolutely brutal austerity measures brought in by the Conservatives were a political choice rather than a necessity. And we were told that we needed to tighten our belts and save money. And it's for a while, people were behind that. And we understand. We need to save some money. But the thing is, all this money that has supposedly been saved has not gone off to pay the national debt, which has actually doubled under the Conservatives.
Pretty well near doubled.
And we have not seen any evidence of it being reintroduced back into society to improve any kind of service anywhere. So where did the money go? All this money that we saved, that all these people have sacrificed their quality of life for, which is what has really happened, where's the money gone? The only place that I can see where the money has gone is tax cuts for the rich. The rich have got richer, they've gained more power and wealth, and the poor have got a lot more poor, to the point where they're living out of food banks. 10 years ago, and I looked this up, food banks were practically unheard of. And now they're everywhere. We live in a town with a population of 2,500. And there's even a food bank here. And this town is quite prosperous for Wales. And I've been talking to my mum about this, who does a lot of charitable work and collection for food banks and things of this, and work with homeless people. And she's certainly noticed this dramatic rise in food banks, which, considering that we are one of the richest countries in the world, is deeply wrong. There's something very, very wrong with what's going on in Britain if we require that many food banks to, just so that a lot of our population can eat. So, seeing as we have slightly veered off the topic of the NHS into food banks and austerity, also very disturbing rise in child poverty. Again, why is this happening in one of the richest countries in the world?
There did used to be legally binding child poverty targets based on low income. But these were removed by the government in 2016. The Tory government, obviously, was 2016. And there aren't any plans currently to reintroduce targets. So the government had targets that said, child poverty set at this level and we'll do everything we can to relieve it. They just removed the targets, which again speaks to their mentality. It shows that the electioneering, we're going to spend this much on this and this much on this and we're going to bring everybody up, we're going to rise all boats, is bollocks, because what they do quietly is of this ilk, of this type.
And coming back to the NHS, really, they have just been quietly and deliberately running down the NHS, and it's no secret now that they want to make the case for privatisation. They want to cripple the NHS to then be able to turn around and say, look, this system isn't working, we must privatise. That is their aim. So we've talked about what the Tories are saying and what they are doing. And really, it's what they are doing, which is the reality. There's nothing about what they're saying that has any kind of truth base at all. So what's it like for people living with the consequences of their actions? I've been talking to a friend of mine recently who's had a really awful experience looking after her elderly mother. And I asked her if I could include her story in this podcast. So she has actually written me. She's written me a statement, and I'm going to read it out. So these are her own words. Last August, my mum became increasingly forgetful, occasionally aggressive, and was no longer washing or changing her clothes. She refused to see her GP, so in desperation, I organised a home visit. The outcome was that until she wants some help, there was nothing that they could do. Eventually, she would end up in hospital. No support was offered to me at all. No support. In January, I came home to find my mum on the floor, semi-clothed in her own wee and unable to stand. I called 999 and agreed to send an ambulance. As I was very distressed during the call, the lady I spoke to said she would contact the GP and arrange help. But it was never forthcoming. In A&E, Mum was left for nearly 4 hours. The nurses discovered that she had soiled herself, looking at me like I was a terrible daughter. So humiliating. Very reluctantly, they admitted her. Once on the ward, she was diagnosed with a water infection, and it was clear that she was in a lot of pain. I raised this continuously, and she was given paracetamol. When I visited one evening, it was clear that she was in terrible pain. Still, nothing was done. A complaint followed, and an X-ray was done, which revealed that she had spinal fractures due to osteoporosis. I received no help, no support whatsoever. Whilst many of the staff were kind, they were horribly overworked. Staff made it clear to me that it was not safe for my mum to return home due to the fractures and the worsening dementia, and she was doubly incontinent and needed 24-hour care. The senior nursing team did all they could to prevent me applying for continuing healthcare, even though every adult leaving the hospital with healthcare needs should be assessed. Mum was eventually moved to a nursing home funded by the NHS for a limited period. A few days after moving there, I was told by other residents that my mum had been pleading for water. I raised this with the manager, who said she would look into it. I also noticed further weight loss, which the manager admitted was the case. By then she was under 6 stone. 3 days later, I received a call from the nursing home to say Mum had possible sepsis. The consultant treating her said she had not eaten or drunk anything for 3 days, despite me being assured that she was eating regularly. The acute care team were wonderful, but despite their efforts, Mum died the following month. Effectively, she refused food and starved to death. I reported the care home, but they have now been upgraded from requires improvement to good. It breaks my heart that other people may suffer as Mum did, having to fight for the most basic things. I cannot change what happened to my mum, but I have to speak out. I have faced hostility from friends with elderly parents that they should not vote Tory, but they seem not to want to listen. Put simply, a vote for Boris Johnson is a vote for this awfulness to continue. My mum should not have suffered like that. And it will take me a long time to get over it, if indeed I ever do. And she goes on to say, that the social worker said that her mum had failed the initial checklist for continuing healthcare that was done without my knowledge. It was redone and then she passed. The social worker said mum would have to self-fund, which was a lie. As the house was in mum's name and we lived with her, we could have become homeless. The NHS agreed to do interim funding for mum, but the nursing home tried to get me to sign the contract. When mum was admitted to hospital, the only time they contacted me was to demand that I collect mum's possessions from the home. Unfortunately, the staff were very rude and defensive at that time.
So I know through talking to my friend that she felt very pressured and almost bullied into having to sell the home that she lived in order to pay for her mum's very necessary medical care. Now, this story that I've just told is something that is going on every day in this country. In fact, some of you listening to this may be very familiar with this scenario. Also, for an elderly person who has dementia and who is in a lot of pain, to be in A&E for 4 hours, 5 hours, maybe all night is a really traumatic experience for them. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the relatives who are accompanying mm-hmm. them, because mm-hmm. A&E in the middle of the night is a very frightening and chaotic place to be in, even at the best of times. Through the research that we've done, we feel absolutely convinced that if the Conservatives are voted in again, they will grind down the NHS even more than they have already. This will cause such a massive wave of suffering to everyone, not just the elderly, children, women giving birth, people who've had accidents and need immediate treatment, and especially the true horror, if we do adopt the system of privatised healthcare that's currently the norm in America, each of us will have to pay vast amounts for any healthcare we receive. I know that I personally couldn't afford to pay even the insurance payments. People in Britain don't really realise how much the Americans pay for even just basic healthcare or dental care. It bankrupts people. It forces them to sell their homes. It ruins their lives. Britain would be a very different place and a very much worse place to live if we lost the NHS. But we can save the NHS by making sure that the Conservatives do not regain power. This will be down to two things, either voting Labour or through tactical voting. Tactical voting is important, and it may mean that you have to vote for somebody who you don't like that much. But if they have the best chance of winning against the Conservative candidate, this is the best thing you can do to make sure that Conservative candidate does not gain a seat. So please look into tactical voting if you haven't already. Yeah. But be careful, because there are some fake tactical voting sites which are misdirecting you. So I hope you found that useful. Another world is possible, a better world, a world where the Tories are gone. Speak to you soon.